This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning and welcome to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. On this Wednesday, February is 12 days old. We are 2 days from Valentine's Day. Danny, have you made your preparations? Have you checked all the boxes to ensure no one's angry at you in 2 days?
We've got a delivery scheduled for that day.
Hey, now.
We've got dinner plans for that night. So I feel like I've done my job
here. Are you allowed to tell me where the dinner plans are?
I am. I forgot. Let me look it up. I made a reservation.
It doesn't sound like you're that confident that you have dinner plans.
No, we do. But it's a where question. Oh, man. Open table.
Now get back to me another time.
Yeah, I need to worry about that.
Let me know later. It sounds to me, if just one guy's guess, like maybe you forgot to make dinner plans.
No, I did. And see, here's what happened. No one cares about this. But I booked a place. I go, oh, let me look at some of these restaurants. Let me figure out what I want to do. Let's go to a place we haven't tried.
The new DC Top 100 just came out,
yeah,
by the way. I was looking at it last night.
And that's kind of what I was thinking. And so there's a spot. It wasn't on the new list, but there's a spot called The Lincoln, which is really well reviewed, and it looked awesome. I was like, oh, this place looks really cool. It's quite literally the first floor of my wife's office building, and she went there a million times. So that's I'm looking around all of DC, and like, let me figure out what I want to do. And I was like, oh, this place looks neat. Oh, it's really close. It's like downtown, just off K Street. She's been there 60, 70, 80, 100 times probably for various activities having to do with work.
Did you actually book or you didn't?
So I booked that. And I went, oh, I can't just stick with that. So I had to pull the ripcord. So the only thing in my head is The Lincoln. We're not going to The Lincoln, which is very well reviewed. We're going somewhere else. And now I can't remember.
Have you been to, there's one place I looked up the top 100 restaurants in D.C. Me and my wife were going over it yesterday. Because we're big on going to any of the places we haven't been to, what have you. There's one place that just jumps out at me every time I see it that screams, you would love this place.
Hmm.
To me, not to you. But you would also love it. Like, this place was designed for me. And I haven't been. American, my kind of menu.
Sure.
Have you been to the Dabney?
Yes.
Everyone talks about the Dabney. How come I haven't been there?
I don't know. It's a
Is
little
it
hip.
Newer?
It's newish. I would say it's
2 years old. I've been there as well.
I would say two, 3 years.
Is it great? It's in the top five in D.C. at this point.
Yeah. Got a Michelin star, I think 2 years running. It's the best restaurant I've ever been to.
You've ever been to?
Probably. Besides Morimoto in Vegas, which is just kind of the Vegas thing.
So I'm trying to make this make sense as best as possible.
Uh-huh.
I go to restaurants that everyone tells me are really good. And if it's American and it's in D.C. and everyone says it's one of the best, I've probably been there. The Dabney, for whatever reason, I've never even heard of this place.
Dude, it's hip. It's very hip.
But it comes up every several months. Yeah. Someone says the Dabney. I think of it as like some random place in Georgetown that I've never heard of. Then I move on.
You haven't heard of it because it's not a place that you can get into just by going to it. It usually takes 2 weeks. They put the reservations out for every 2 weeks, and you have to be on right when they put those reservations out to book in any time in those 2 weeks.
That could be why. I hate places like that, which I understand why if there's a huge demand.
Yeah, there's lots of demand, yeah.
But I would just like to be able to go to the restaurant, not show up, but I'd like to be able to call and get a reservation like for a few days out. And the fact that you can't do that makes it difficult. It's probably not my wheelhouse, but I need to go there. I need to try it.
Also, another wheelhouse part of it is that the menu changes every day. So you can't look at the menu.
That. I looked at the menu last night, and it said our menu for February 11th, and I thought,
yeah, so Tuesday's
that's just
menus,
an over-the-top way of saying today's menu, but you're not changing the menu tomorrow.
Tuesday's menu's up. They haven't put up the Wednesday menu yet. So this says Tuesday, February 11th.
But I bet you
the menu
doesn't change that much.
I think there's big turnover. Yeah,
I
think that's the thing.
I checked the day that I was going, and what was online compared to what I was handed was different.
Think about the ingredients and the things in the restaurant, though. I mean, I don't know that you can completely overturn your menu day to day.
Well, this is their advantage, is that they have a whole like ecosystem like self-made garden on the roof of the restaurant.
So that's what all their stuff comes from right upstairs. That's kind of the appeal. So you go to their website and they don't get to the part about the restaurant for like 10 paragraphs.
Tweet me at Grant H. Paulson and let me know if I need to go there. Do I need to make this
it's great.
Priority in the next couple of weeks?
You do need to go there, but I'm going to tell you, you probably won't enjoy it.
The menu's pretty good. I mean, the menu's all stuff that I would like. I think I would, but it sounds like it's very hoity-toity in its process and takes itself very seriously. So you're right.
Not at all. It's actually a very comfortable, homey type of feel.
All right. We'll give it a whirl, possibly. Last night, Danny, I'm sure you were very excited because you're such a dog guy. We had a dog show to watch on television.
What?
Yes. The Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, the 144th installment. Seba, a black standard poodle with a meticulously groomed coat and a taste for chicken, won Best in Show. Did you watch any of the dog show?
No, I did not. I have watched the movie Best in Show, which is hilarious.
It's a really good
movie. It's a Christopher Guest movie. So anything that's that ripe for parody is probably not something that I'll enjoy.
So the actual telecast itself, you're right, it is designed for an SNL skit, basically. You cringe listening to some of the shtick.
Right.
The interviews they're doing are pretty terrible. The broadcast itself, somehow Chris Myers of NFL football sideline fame.
Chris Myers is a great broadcaster.
Was on the call.
No,
of that.
Chris Myers.
But they had the All-American girl, as Gus Johnson calls her, Jenny Taft, doing a lot of the sideline work, and she's very good generally. Very, very plugged in on all the dogs and knows all the history in the background on how
did
many
her
times.
Research.
All I can tell you is, I can't say always, but there have been several times where we do this. Me, the wife, the dog, we sit there and we watch. And Fiona gets right up on the TV. It's just hilarious. She's got her paws on the little table right at the TV, barking at every dog as they come down. She knows exactly what's going on. It's her Super Bowl, man. She had a
wild
good night.
See, I remember reading once that dogs couldn't actually see TV the way we do.
So supposedly they can't. Except that every time there's a dog on TV,
she barks at
or on Saturday mornings, there's like six different animal shows and veterinary shows on Saturday morning.
Uh-huh.
So I wake up and Saturday, a lot of times my wife will go to the gym or whatever, and that's like my time, just me, the baby, and the dog. So we'll go down, we'll put on all these shows, watch all the animals get fixed by all these veterinarians on every channel, 4, 5, 7, 9, it's all the same thing, right? Uh-huh. Fiona is plugged in, man. She sees these animals. She sees these dogs. So she knows. When a dog's on TV.
That's how you know you got a special dog who can actually see the way dogs can't see.
But what I'm telling you is I think your information is bad. I think that was kind of one of those things like you're told as a kid to make you feel better.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That bee stung you. It died immediately. It just fell to the ground, which it doesn't really happen
like
that
way. Like one of those big myths that the daddy long legs is actually the most poisonous spider in the world.
Exactly.
Just not at all, by the way. But right. People have been told that
it's
for so long.
Just got a small mouth and it can't bite you, so the fact that it's crawling on you is not an issue at all. No, this is not like that. This is a dog sitting in a room knows when another dog's on TV. You would know this if you had dogs and you were a dog guy.
Mm.
Like you claim to be, Danny.
I grew up with dogs and they never barked at the television.
Not once?
When there was a really loud chase scene and like guns were going off?
Or dogs barking. That's a big one. Dogs barking generally.
Right, if there's dogs barking on television.
Some barking from the dog.
We had plenty of that in the neighborhood though.
But no, these were just like poodles walking around being graded.
Can you imagine being a judge? That's your life.
All I could think about yesterday was being a judge.
Well, like the dog is sitting there at attention, and just your hand just goes near their special parts, and you're like evaluating something.
That's
your life.
Take that's a weird take that you have.
I'm saying you examine the backside of a dog. You examine the special place of a dog.
They pretty much just examine the teeth, honestly.
They do that a lot.
They just watch them. Otherwise,
they do. There's haunch touching. It's just bizarre.
I didn't see any haunch touching last night.
Oh man, it's the life of one of these judges that's going to decide one dog is better than another based on this arbitrary set of criteria about like purity of breed. It's the
weirdest
thing in the world.
It's not any different really than like a beauty contest, probably, in terms of arbitrary criteria. Like they're looking for things. You don't understand it. I don't understand it. But when they're broadcasting it last night, they're talking about the gait and how one leg and the other leg are supposed to be working in unison and they can't be going forward at the same time. I mean, I wouldn't call it arbitrary. There's like literal things they're looking for.
Right. Well, they're arbitrarily assigned. And to me,
yes, as much as anything is assigned in these contests.
Well, like a beauty contest, they say they're looking for certain things, right? Like the answer to a question. What question is the dog answering?
They didn't answer any last night.
They walk around, led by their owners, and then they sit there and they're like judging their haunches. That's all. I keep saying the same phrase.
It's not so true, but I like that you think they're judging their haunches.
They judge the form of the body. They judge the look of the dog.
Best in show. You're showing a dog. It's about the physical appeal and look of the dog. The quote unquote like best in show. The best of the breeds. It's the whole point of the whole thing.
Right. I understand what the point is.
Right.
What I'm saying is it shouldn't exist. There isn't any point. And just a bunch of people got together to decide who has the prettiest dog. And they have these weird criteria as to what makes it.
Thousands of people in attendance.
Oh, they love it.
I mean, it's a stadium full of people and they go nuts. The fan favorite last night, by the way, shouldn't have been because this type of dog is the most overrated we have. The Golden Retriever. People were loving the Golden Retriever.
You didn't think that white dog with the really long face was the fan favorite? He got a big pop, too.
He got a pop. That was a face in wrestling that came out, and he goes, I just want everyone to know I'm voting for Saquon Barkley as Rookie of the Year, Meadowlands.
Well, that dog, like, the way he looked is if it was a dog movie and you were casting the sheriff of the town,
yeah,
that's what that dog would get. He would be the sheriff.
Here's my little nugget for people who watched it. It sounds like Thom did last night.
Yeah, Thom was in. We just found out.
Super steamed up for Wilma, the boxer. Wilma, the boxer, was a gorgeous dog. Even Danny Ruye might admit Wilma, the boxer, was a pretty dog.
The boxer. Isn't that the one with the messed up face?
I think.
No, boxers have weird faces?
Most dogs have weird faces, but yeah, I could show you what it looks like. It's kind of like a, you would think they're a weird face, I would think. It's like a French bulldog, but bigger and kind of more, less squished.
Okay.
Here's a boxer.
Let me see the boxer.
Okay.
Oh, no, that's not a weird face. I'm thinking of something else.
All right.
But there's a dog that's very unappealing that's, like, tall and has, like, a really weird face. It usually has, like, teeth shooting out the side and looks all weird.
I got nothing for you there.
I got nothing on that. Sorry.
If you guys enjoyed that like I did with your dogs, it was a good night for the family. Next, Trent Williams, Ron Rivera, the Redskins communicating with their left tackle yesterday. We've got some details on that discussion, and we'll discuss what we think should have come out of that next on Grant and Danny.
Guys, it's Grant and Danny here for our friends at EMP180 Weight Loss. Let them help you. I'm going to say this very simply. If you go to EMP180 Weight Loss, you do what they say, you will lose weight. You will lose body fat. You will feel better. You will look better. Again, if you do what they say, you will lose fat. Isn't that the whole point? Isn't that why you joined the gym? Isn't that why you had that New Year's resolution? Isn't that why you have that pair of pants in your closet that you can't wear? Because you're too pudgy? I know I did for a while. Then I went to EMP180 Weight Loss. They changed my life. Let them change yours.
EMP180. Got my brothers down a combined 200 pounds. Got the three Paulson boys combined down about 300 pounds. And they added years to our lives. I don't know what you're waiting for. If you want to get slimmer, if you want to get more compliments, and if you want to be healthier, which is the most important part of the whole thing, then maybe you should give them a call at 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180, or go to emp180weightloss.com and get started with a consultation today. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Ian Rappaport tweeted yesterday that a potentially significant development took place for the Redskins when franchise left tackle Trent Williams and new head coach Ron Rivera, as he put it, touched base for what sounded like a positive conversation, according to what he was told. The next step is for Williams to come into Redskins Park in Ashburn for a visit. The two sides are now communicating. For those of you that have forgotten or kind of moved on from this story like the rest of us have months ago, Trent Williams was unhappy with the Skins. They misdiagnosed and mishandled his health when he had a very serious cancer scare and needed to get an operation to get a cancerous tumor removed from his head. He has held a grudge against them, understandably, since he was unhappy with their training staff, which has been largely reworked, and he was very unhappy with their head trainer, Larry Hess, who's no longer with the team. He was at odds with Bruce Allen, who he didn't respect or like. Bruce Allen has since been fired. Those are the people that we knew most specifically he took issue and umbrage with. They're no longer with the team. They're presumably other people that still work for the Redskins that he doesn't see eye to eye with. But he sat out all of last year. at the cost of $14 million in salary that he would have been making, that he just decided not to collect on, in addition to fines and penalties that the Redskins could levy against him and decided to when he reported. I say all that, Danny, to say that now he is talking with a brand new head coach who he's starting over with in Ron Rivera, who's trying to mend the fences. That's where we are.
My hope, generally, is that Ron Rivera, as the grand poobah, the guy in charge of everything, which is why, again, I always think the head coach should not be in charge of everything, but, you know, such is life. You, in order to get somebody, maybe you've got to give more, right? If you're the Redskins, you have to pay the we stink tax here to get someone like Ron Rivera to come in. You have to give him autonomy. My hope is that what a head coach does is, hey, we should try to win this year, because that's what head coaches do. They try to go all in to win every game they possibly can to make themselves look smart. Executives who have different plans say, yes, we'd like to win this year, but we'd also like to set ourselves up to really win, to get to the mountaintop sometime in the near future. The best path forward for that is to trade Trent Williams and get younger and get less expensive and have an influx of young core talent to go with some of the guys that are now in years two, three, four, going into this kind of building phase of the Washington Redskins. The sense I have is that Ron Rivera's going, I need to have an immediate impact. I need to win a few more games than this last group did just to show that people need to buy into what I'm selling. To that end, I think he's trying to bring Trent Williams back into the fold. And you know, he's been open about that. He said that publicly, but I also believe that he thinks that privately. And my hope is, the conversation was, what city do you want to go play in, buddy? We'll see if we can get a trade for them. We'll see if we can get them to give us a second-round pick, and we'll send your butt there. What probably happened is, I want you, I need you, be my left tackle. We'll see if we can get a deal done.
So my first question, really, when it becomes a debate now about whether or not to bring Williams back, is how good is he going to be when he returns? He won't have played this past season. This is riding a bike for him. He's been playing offensive line his entire life. So I don't feel like he lost anything. I don't think from a technique standpoint he'll have to pay the price for that. If anything, not playing last year could be a benefit because his body could be rested. He could be healthier. He could feel better than he has in a long time because of lesser and more infrequent wear and tear. But he's also going to be 32 years old in July. And he's also oft injured. We talk about this a lot, but before missing the entire 2019 season, he missed three games in 2018, six games in 2017, a quarter of a season in 2016, two games in 2015, a game in 2014. Now, not all of those games missed were because of health. There were suspensions mixed in when he's missed time in his career as well, dating back to 2011 because he's twice gotten in trouble for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But he has not played a full season since 2013, 7 years ago, when he was 24 years old. He's going to be 32 this year. Why should I expect that he can come back and play 16 games? If he could give me 14, 15, I'll deal with that. That's fine. 14 games of Trent Williams, a lot better than 16 of somebody else probably. Uh-huh. But when you start to get down to 11, 12, 13 games played, and at least three times I've got to use a backup left tackle, almost a quarter of a season. Not to mention the games where you're out for a possession or two, you're out for a series here or there, you leave for a quarter because you're constantly dealing with ankle and knee and finger and all kinds of different problems. At some point, the juice is no longer worth the squeeze for me to get your excellent Pro Bowl caliber, all-pro type play. If you're still one of the best left tackles in the league, I'll grin and bear it. If you can still push people around and you have the athleticism and the speed and the quickness and the feet to be one of the elite players in the game at your position, which has been the case since day one in 2010 when he started 13 games after being drafted fourth overall by Mike Shanahan as the first pick of the Shanahan era here in Washington and of Oklahoma, then I'll deal with that. But I don't think he's that anymore. Maybe he is. And that's why I am trying to trade him if I'm Ron Rivera. Like you, I would have spent part of that conversation saying, listen, man, I respect what happened last year, and I admire your persistence in fighting the man, so to speak, that had wronged you. I'm sorry that that happened to you. That obviously had nothing to do with me. We're turning the page here. But I need to know if you're 100% committed and you're all in, if you're going to be at every workout, if you're going to be at every practice, because if you're going to lead my team, I need every message you send to be that of team first, loving and caring about the Redskins. And if you can't do that, then you can't help establish my new culture.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you think he's going to do that? Why would he? I just don't see that. So I'm trading him. But the question is, when Rivera spoke to Trent Williams yesterday, what do you hope came out of that? And what would you have said? You play Ron Rivera. We'll both play Rivera and kind of go through that conversation next, but we'll take some calls on this at 800-636-1067. How do you hope the talk went between those two? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. I walked into a GNC the other day to try to get some Quest bars. And that's when I stumbled into these Quest chips I was trying to tell you to try.
They're the chippies, yeah.
Quest chips, they're delicious. But here's where I'm going with this. So they've got, do you know how many types they have? Brands? They've got at least four that I can think of off the top of my head in terms of like the different flavors of chip that are available. But there's this kid behind the counter. And I say kid because I'm now old.
I know, that's what happens. You do that.
He was probably young 20s, I would guess. And he says, yeah, they're really good, man. I said, all right, I'm going to try them. So I get 8 bags.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they're buy 4, get 1. You can just grab a couple more. Awesome. You're very helpful. Thank you, young man.
I'd like to help you.
So I'm grabbing these bags, and I come up with a bunch of barbecue and different things that I like.
Sure.
And he goes, oh, you didn't get the best kind. And I'm like, really? What's the best kind? He goes, you got to get these chili lime flavored Quest protein chips.
Now, I have actually not had the chili lime.
Well, I'm here to tell you the whole point of this story. That guy was wrong.
Oh, well, you hate variety and flavor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is my point. Why did I listen to a stranger when he told me that was the best
kind? He doesn't know you.
He
doesn't
no
know my friend Grant Paulson.
It's like people who ask the waiter or the waitress, what should I get, the steak or the chicken? What do you like better? They don't know your taste buds. They have a completely different collection of taste buds that they're going to now answer this question based on. I had these chips in my hand. I had barbecue. I had sour cream and onion, which I love. I grew up going to Ben Gallier's house after school eating some sour cream and onion chips
sure
from his
did.
Cabinet. I could go through the whole list. I had 3 or 4 types, all these things that I've always loved. Like, one of them is basically tortilla chips.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes like I'm eating tortilla chips at a Mexican restaurant with some type of salsa that I would never touch that other people would be dipping their chips into. And then he told me to get the chili lime. And so I put back chips that I knew I would love to try the chili lime. And this kid is so wrong. I don't like the chili lime at all. It's almost spicy, I would say.
Right, which would
There's a kick to them.
Which would be great and awesome for anybody that's looking for flavor in their life.
I should have known with the word chili that I was going to hate it.
Yeah, you should. And you should not take you need to know yourself. You shouldn't take recommendations from people. Because when people give recommendations, they assume flavor profiles. They assume food variety. They assume adventure. Like, if I go to a restaurant, I've opted into that restaurant. So I'm one of those guys that asks the waiter what he likes. Because
no, I do it all the time. And my point is, maybe I shouldn't.
You shouldn't. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. You shouldn't. Because they don't know your life. They don't know that you are going with the same things you ate as a 10-year-old. Because they were great.
But,
and you're so happy with them.
I'm not getting creative with them about, like, I would never order something that I haven't eaten. In other words, because a waiter told me to. Or a waitress told me to. This was a flavor that I've never tried. It's a terrible idea by me to listen to this guy.
You shouldn't listen to him.
He said, oh, you got to get the chili lime. Do I have to? Okay, I'll get it if you say so. Why did I do that? When I'm asking waiters and waitresses, it's things like, hey, what's the cut here that I got to get? Is it a ribeye?
Right.
How's your strip? And different things like that.
Your question should be, how big a portion is it really? You know what I mean?
That's one of the questions.
You know what you want.
Indeed.
The way I try to, people have asked me, not a lot of people. And these aren't the same people that, by the way, are
here,
like...
try. These are just some small ones
at the
bottom.
Give me a little fleck, yeah.
But tell me, like, they're very spicy. So tell me what you think of that.
I got little pieces here. Here we go.
Tell me if you agree that this guy didn't know what he was talking about.
Oh, he's exactly right. That's awesome.
No.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's not.
The sheer audacity of that chip to have flavor.
Yeah, it's got flavor. So it's got...
It's not flavor. It's a kick. You know, it really kicks you in the ribs.
That's the point, yeah.
Spice.
So you've had those the lime flavored chili lime sort of flavored tortilla chips?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
The Tostitos, yeah.
It's got some of that.
But spicier.
But about the same. but it's got a little bit of, how do I say this the right way? It's like a, it's got a little bit of barbecue to it. So it's like chili barbecue with like the lime at the end. It's,
so what you're saying is it's a chili lime chip.
Yeah, but I think of chili differently than I think of barbecue, and it's got some of the tang of a barbecue chip.
I wish it had
some
barbecue tang. I don't taste that. I just taste
a little bit.
I kind of taste. You guys ever eaten like a Carolina Reaper? It tastes to me like you're eating Carolina Reapers.
One of the hottest peppers on the planet.
In chip form.
What's a Carolina Reaper?
It's like,
is that pepper?
Burns your mouth.
Is it like the ghost chili that's always on the Food Network?
Exactly. Like kids eat it and on YouTube, and then they like have to drink milk after, and they get sick everywhere.
Do you need milk? Because there is some in the market.
You can get some.
As you know, I'm anti-milk. I don't really do that, but I have water, luckily, because I do need a little bit of a drink. Hey, real quick on Trent Williams.
Uh-huh.
You're Ron Rivera. You call him. What do you say to him?
Sorry about what happened to you. We didn't do it. It was done to you, and I respect the heck out of you. We're going to find you someplace good to go. You don't want to be here. You didn't want to be here with the last group. I need buy-in with my program. And I think it'd be too much to ask for you to do that. I think you'd be just going through the motions and buying in, not because you wanted to, but because you felt obligated. You'd be doing it to try to get a new deal or something like that. We are trading you, and we're going to take care of you. Just don't make any noise. Don't sandbag my new operation here. I respect you. You're a great player. You're on a Hall of Fame track. I think you've done so much, so many deposits in the bank. We're going to move you, try to make you happy. Please don't rock the boat.
I'd say come in and meet with me at the facility. And if he shows any type of hesitation to do that, or he bristles, or this is another phase of me having to basically like appease him, mm-hmm. where he goes, no, you come to me, or I don't want to come in. Good. That tells me everything I need to know. Moving on. Thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your time. But if he comes into the facility and he meets me face to face, I say, listen, I need to know, do you want to be a Washington Redskin or not? I know that you hated everything about the team last year. I get that. I understand that you didn't like Bruce Allen. You'll notice that he's no longer got an office.
Yeah, he's gone here.
I know that you weren't happy with Larry Hess. You may see if you go down to the training area that he, too, has packed all of his bags. You can't hold against me and my new staff what those guys did. So we are starting fresh right now today. I'm giving you a clean slate. You're giving us a clean slate. Do you want to be here or not? And if his answer is yes, then I need him to commit that you're going to be at every workout. You're going to be at OTAs. That you're not going to want a new contract. By the way, he's going into a contract.
Because you're a leader, dude, whether you like it or not.
My guess is he wants a new contract still. We'll see. This is my speculation, but I'll bet at some point in the near future we're going to find out that he's looking for some type of money or commitment. Because think about it. He's about to be 32 years old. He's only got a few seasons of play at his Trent Williams Pro Bowl level left, you'd imagine. So for him to go into a contract year without getting a new deal is, from a business standpoint, probably something he's being advised not to do. This is when you would hold out, generally.
Mm-hmm.
He happened to do it a year earlier to try to force the Redskins' hand with some extra leverage. He made the mistake of thinking they were going to be smart and they'd move him for draft picks. That's the mistake he made.
Right.
They decided that they weren't going to do that because that organization a year ago was not smart.
Bruce Allen had a couple things in each. Put your palms up if you're listening, and you can safely, right? He was weighing his options. You ever done that before? You weighed your options? In one hand, he had smart, savvy, long-term thinking, building for the future. In the other hand, he had pettiness and vindictiveness. And you know what was heavier for him? Pettiness and vindictiveness. That's what he chose. That's what old Bruce chose, to make sure that he sent some kind of message. His strategy, never forget, this was reported. His strategy was to, quote, bleed Trent Williams dry. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to find him so much that he came back gratefully. What on earth?
Here's the last thing I would have said to him, Danny. I would have said, I'm giving you 1 week, sir. In 1 week, I need to know. You're either all in or you're not. And no disrespect either way. No personal feelings for me either way.
We can deal
this
with whatever the answer is.
It has nothing to do with our relationship.
I like that.
You come back to me in 1 week, and either you're all in, which means you're here every single day that I ask you to be for every workout, because I am building my organization around you and a couple other guys, and everyone's going to be taking their cues from you. Or you're not, and that's cool, and I will trade you. And we can work with your agent and yourself to try to make sure that you're happy where you end up, but you are moving on, and you will no longer be a Redskin. Your call. You got 1 week to decide. I'll call you in 24 hours times 7 days. How many hours is that? Quick math.
Oh, I can't do it in my head. 24 times 7.
I'm going to give you 168 hours.
168. I got there.
There should be a movie called 168 Hours where you have like 1 week to do something.
What was the James Franco movie?
It should star Liam Neeson.
Cut his hand off?
That was 36 hours or something.
127 hours, Tommy says. So that's that like, yeah, it was like 4 or 5 days like that.
Grant and Danny on the Fan next. The Nats pitchers and catchers showing up at spring training today. Let's answer some of the burning questions about the Nationals that are going to determine what kind of season they're going to have next right here on the Fan. Pitchers and catchers showing up at spring training in West Palm Beach for the Nationals today. First workout for those pitchers and catchers tomorrow. Position players coming before the end of the week. Baseball season for the World Series champions has arrived. We'll get into the Skins, Trent Williams, and all the things they got going on at Redskins Park in what is a critical week in roster building and team decision making, according to Ron Rivera, with Chris Russell coming up at the top of the hour at 11. But Danny, in the post today, they had some burning Nats questions as pitchers and catchers descend on the team's training complex. So we figured we'd answer those on the air.
Let's get to it. I mean, the key, and it seems to be, by the way, there's a little bit of a groundswell, a little bit of a pulse about what Carter Kieboom is going to do spring training and then maybe making the club out of spring training. And it would solve a lot of question marks for this team if he takes over the third base job. I think you and I don't want to speak for you, but I consider him somebody that I think should start in the minors, in AAA, keep, you know, knocking down the door of the big leagues and eventually come up if needed, because you got a bunch of veterans to sort of fill those spots. But there's a pulse here, and it's coming from somewhere, whether it's the Nationals themselves kind of saying, hey, this may be what we're thinking or what's going on. But I see his name more and more in some of these reports, and here's one with Jesse Docherty, that if Kieboom makes the club, there's your third baseman, that's what they're doing, no problem. What do you think the likelihood of that is?
Very unlikely, and I think that it's not necessarily a report that he could make the club as much as a speculation that hypothetically if he did, it would be a good thing for the Nats because they wouldn't have to piecemeal third base together. But I don't think there is much momentum toward that at all. The people I talk to with the team certainly are not saying that or getting that word out there that they think or even want him to break spring training with the club. Look, he's 22 years old and he's been in the minor leagues now for a total of 330 games. So it's not insane to think that he could have a really good spring training and end up making the big league roster. He hit a couple of home runs off Justin Verlander in a spring training game last year, if memory serves. But he's the 28th overall pick in 2016. He's coming along at a nice pace. He was incredible in the Pacific Coast League in AAA for Fresno last year. He played in 109 games. He hit over 300. He had over a 900 OPS. Hit 16 homers. He can run a little bit. He stole a handful of bases in the minor leagues as well. People are down on him in D.C. because they saw him for 11 games before he was ready. He had 43 plate appearances. He struck out 16 times. He only hit 128, and he really scuffled. But the bigger problem was the game was way too fast for him defensively. He made a bunch of miscues, errors, and just non-errors that, frankly, you can't make at the major league level. I mean, in 10 starts, 90 innings worth of defense, he committed 4 errors in the field for the Nationals. So the thought is, he's not good defensively. He can't hit at the big league level. And people are just overrating a tiny sample size. He'll be good this year. I believe he'll be their best third baseman. He'll start the most games at third because I think he'll be up sometime in middle May, probably. Late May, early June is more realistic, perhaps. You know, best case scenario, it's earlier in May. But they brought in Starlin Castro for a reason. Mm-hmm. He can play second and third. They re-signed Asdrubal Cabrera for a reason as a stopgap. I think everything they did, the writing on the wall to me, is we got these veterans to get us by for several weeks until this kid is ready. They don't want to put any pressure on him because they know that he rushed the first time and it didn't work out.
Right.
They want to make sure this time that when he comes up to the major leagues, he is here to stay.
Who's their number five starter? That's another question that's swirling around. Your candidates, at least on paper here, Joe Ross, Eric Fetty, Austin Voth. Every one of those guys did something that would make you say, hey, this could be the fifth starter. Every one of those guys has done something that makes you say, maybe that's not the best idea. I don't know ultimately who's going to win this. I think what they'll do, you know, some of the decisions that are made, obviously, as to who has options left, and that complicates the process. But just on its face, if you look at Ross, Fetty and Voth. Last year, Austin Voth and nine starts had the best numbers of the three of those guys. Joe Ross is the guy that started the playoff game on short notice. His last start of the season, remember, against Cleveland, he used his changeup better than you've really seen him use it. He had a stretch in, I believe, either August or September, where over five starts, his ERA was just over one. Is a guy that they wanted, they've given a lot of chances to because he looks the part just in terms of his stuff. And then Fetty, of course, is your sort of workmanlike, you know, sinker slider combo, has to be very fine with everything that he does. Who wins that number five starter job?
So Fetty, I think, begins in the minor leagues because the one of the three with the option.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of makes the decision for you. Even if he's excellent, you don't want to lose one of these three guys. You don't have the organizational pitching depth that you'd like. So you have to maintain the rights to all three. And by putting Fetty in the minors, it allows you to have one of Ross and Voth in the rotation and the other in the bullpen at the major league level. I like Fetty's stuff more as a starter than a reliever. So when he gets called back up, ideally it'll be to start games. But if he goes down to the minor leagues, Voth in that 96-mile-an-hour fastball out of the pen could play for an inning or so at a time. Ross, to me, is much closer to being an answer in the rotation. Remember, he started a game in the World Series, and he didn't pitch terribly. He actually, in the second half of last year, showed pretty well, I thought.
Pretty good.
His ERA has been over five each of the last three seasons. It was a career-worst 5.48 this past year. But if you look at his fielding independent pitching, it was about 4.5, which was down a full run and change, almost a run and a half, from where his fielding independent pitching was 1 year earlier. So he made some strides being further removed from Tommy John surgery last year. Unlike Voth, he's a former first-round pick, which speaks to the upside, the stuff, you know, just the overall repertoire that he possesses as a former 25th overall pick. I would go with Joe Ross in the rotation. Last time we saw him, he pitched against the Astros in the World Series. And while he wasn't great, he handled his own.
Second half ERA last year, 3.8 for Joe Ross in nine starts.
Which is why I think, do you agree with me when I say he goes into camp the heavy favorite?
I would say he's the favorite.
Is heavy favorite too strong? Maybe. I honestly would be surprised if he doesn't win the job. So yeah, I'd say heavy favorite.
So there are three categories. It's slight favorite, favorite, heavy favorite. I've got him borderline heavy favorite between favorite and heavy favorite.
Okay.
So I'm not quite as bullish as you, but I think he wins the job. So what does that mean? Kind of between us there. Next question. Who bets third? Who bets third for this team? The scuttlebutt, or muddle scud, if you will, is that Trey Turner maybe could do it. Of course, you just have your best offensive player, Juan Soto, do it. Maybe it's Howie Kendrick, a guy that was unbelievable last year, just more of as a pure hitter, less as a guy that's taking pitches. Maybe you want the guy most likely to get a base hit to come up. Who hits third for the majority of the games now for the Nationals?
For me, it would be Juan Soto. I don't think they'll do this because they seem, for whatever reason, pretty locked in on him being the cleanup batter.
They love him at four, yeah.
But what I would do is I would go Eaton one, Turner two, Soto three, and then Kendrick when he plays four. On days where he doesn't, maybe it's Zimmerman when he's going good.
Mm-hmm.
Could be as Drubal occasionally, although I'd prefer not to do that. I would have him fifth after a right-handed bat.
Don't sleep on Castro getting looks to do that.
I think Castro will absolutely hit fourth some.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do it for me all the time.
I know.
But again, they like him more than I do. But the top three, I don't really have a whole lot of debate for me. I would go Eaton, Turner, Soto, 1, 2, 3, almost every single game. Those three guys would be on the field and in those spots in the order.
Any school of thought to switching the first two? Because remember, they
don't
love
have a big
that.
Problem with that.
They
yeah.
love that, having Turner lead off.
I really don't have an issue with that. If Turner leads off, that's perfectly fine. But if they do that, then you get to where Soto would probably hit cleanup because you're not going back-to-back lefties. The reason I go Eaton first, one, I think he probably gets on base a little more than Turner does in the long run anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I like the power of Turner slotted two in the order as a run producer when Eaton gets on and steals or doubles or something like that. I think the extra base hits for Turner gets you a little more from the two spot rather than leadoff. But more than anything else, I like the idea of righty-lefty for late in games.
I get it.
It may not matter as much as I think about it now that
you're
bringing in.
Those two guys handle lefties pretty well.
Well, but you're bringing in pitchers for three batters at a time. So I wonder how that'll influence managers who used to break up righties and lefties so that you wouldn't bring in, let's say, a lefty for one. You'd have to bring him in and go get him after one batter. So I would put my lineup lefty, righty, lefty so that you'd have to go get a righty, then go get a lefty. Starting this year, when a pitcher comes in, unless they finish an inning, they've got to face three straight batters.
Yeah. So two of those could be lefties if you have it backed up. Which
absolutely.
May, you know,
so we'll you may still want to break it up. So there you go. Some burning questions on the Nats as they report for spring training right here on Grant and Danny. We'll do a little Nats spring training banter early in every show from this point on now the rest of the way. Chris Russell on what's going to happen with Trent Williams. The relationship between he and Ron Rivera just getting started as of yesterday when they spoke, apparently, for the first time. How's this going to end? You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.